Welcome to Torati Mechanach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Rachel Kosowski, and today we will be studying Megillat Esther Perek Tet, Chapter 9. Yesterday, in Perek Chet, Chapter 8, we learned that the execution of Haman did not automatically lead to the salvation of the Jews. In fact, Ahasuerus did not agree to rescind the proclamation Haman had issued in his name, but instead allowed Esther and Mordechai to send a new proclamation about the Jews, effectively allowing for a war within his empire, since the new law which was sent out gave Jews the right to defend themselves. Perek Tet, Chapter 9, opens on the 13th of Adar, the day Haman had picked out of a hat to destroy the Jews. Yesterday we learned about the overall structure of Megillat Esther as we are completing the book. It is also interesting to note the passage of time throughout the book. Perek Aleph, Chapter 1, began in the third year of Ahasuerus' reign. In Perek Bet, Chapter 2, Esther is chosen to be queen in the seventh year of Ahasuerus' reign, so 4 years pass in the first two chapters of the Megillah. By the beginning of Perek Gimel, Chapter 3, when Haman decides to destroy the Jews, it is the 12th year of Ahasuerus' reign, so 2.5 chapters take place over 9 years. After that, time slows down. From then until this point in the Megillah, it has been a little under a year. Miraculously, when Haman uses a lottery to decide when to kill the Jews, it comes out 11 months later from Nisan to Adar, giving the Jews time to find a way out of this decree against them. The three middle chapters, Hevav and Zion, 5, 6, and 7, take place over 2 days. Esther makes a party one day. Ahasuerus can't sleep that night, and she makes a second party the next day. Those 2 days are literally fateful in that the entire fate of the Jews relies on what is accomplished during that time. While the beginning of the Megillah gives us the background information leading up to the plot to annihilate the Jews, and the end of the Megillah describes their salvation, those 2 days in the middle are when all the action takes place which causes the reversal of fortune. Yesterday, we talked about the structure of the Megillah being a mirror image of itself, highlighting this theme of reversal. Today's chapter spells out that theme using the words v'nhafochu, and it was turned to the opposite. Yud Gimel Adar, the 13th of Adar, had been a day, asher sibru oivei ha-Yehudim l'shlot bahem, that the enemies of the Jews had planned to dominate them, but instead, asher yishlotu ha-Yehudim hema b'sonehem. The Jews dominated their enemies. It is also interesting to think about how little had changed, and yet everything had changed. The initial decree had ordered that all Jews, men, women, and children, be slaughtered. The new decree simply said the Jews could defend themselves, but that made all the difference psychologically. Presumably, the Jews could have defended themselves without a royal edict, but with it, they feel emboldened to do so, and no one tries to stop them. We are told in Pasuk Bet, verse 2 of chapter 9, that throughout the provinces of King Ahasuerus, Jews in each city congregated to fight those who sought to do evil to them. V'ish lo amad lifneihem. No one stood up against them. Ki nafal pachdam al kol ha'amim. Because fear of them had fallen on all the nations. Furthermore, all the king's officers and nobles throughout the empire were supporting the Jews because they were afraid of Mordechai, who had gained so much stature in the king's court. So the political reversal engineered by Esther leads to a widespread reversal regarding how Jews view themselves and how they are viewed by others, which in turn leads to the physical salvation of the Jews. The Jews are successful in battle on this 13th of Adar. We are told that the Jews of Shushan kill 500 men. The Megillah then famously lists the 10 sons of Haman who were killed. Pasuk Yud, verse 10, tells us, Uva biza lo shalchu et yadam. The Jews did not take spoils from this war. In the Dot Mikra commentary, Amos Chacham points out that not taking the spoils runs counter to Mordechai's proclamation sent in the name of the king in the previous chapter, which included in Perek Chet, Pasuk Yud Aleph, chapter 8, verse 11, Ushlalam lavoz, that Jews were given permission to take spoils. Alshich suggests that they didn't take the spoils to show Ahasuerus that they were purely motivated. They simply needed to get rid of those who hated them, not looking to profit from it. Rashi comments that they were afraid of arousing Ahasuerus's greed by profiting from the war. Perhaps on a deeper level, not taking from the spoils was a way of recognizing Hashem's role in their victory. When Bnei Israel, the people of Israel, began the conquest of Eretz Israel, the land of Israel, the first city they successfully conquered was Jericho, Jericho. I heard a suggestion in an online shiur from Yeshivat Ma'alot by Rav Menashe Wiener that because this conquest was completely miraculous, clearly Yad Hashem, God's hand, they were not allowed to take any spoils for themselves in recognition of this miracle, as opposed to subsequent conquests, which were a partnership between Hashgachat Hashem, divine providence, and the people taking initiative. In our story, in which Hashem's role is not nearly as obvious as the conquest of Jericho, refraining from taking the spoils of war is a way of acknowledging the hidden role of Hashem in the victory. The Sefer Binyan Ariel, cited in Rav Bachrach's Ketvuni Lido, wrote, views not taking the spoils as a tikkun, a righting of the wrong done in the time of King Shaul. We mentioned when learning Perek Gimel, Chapter 3, that the conflict between Mordechai and Haman and subsequently the entire Jewish people is put in the context of the struggle between our people and Amalek, specifically Shaul ben Kish and Amalek under King Agag, which is echoed by tracing Mordechai's lineage back to Kish and calling Haman by the name of Agag, Haman ha'Agagi. When Shaul fought Amalek, he was specifically instructed by Hashem not to take spoils of war, and he violated that command. The people here in the Megillah are looking to fix this violation. The story in Perek Tet, Chapter 9, continues with Esther asking Ahasuerus for an additional day in Shushan for the Jews to continue fighting their enemies, which the king grants her. The Dot Mikra commentary suggests that this request was due to the many enemies of the Jews that were in Shushan who had been led by Haman's 10 sons. Furthermore, since Ahasuerus is in Shushan, it's possible to get a decree out immediately. Malbim suggests that this was a way to further intimidate those who would want to harm the Jews, which is also why Esther asks that the bodies of the 10 sons of Haman be displayed. So, the Jews of Shushan fought their enemies on the 13th and 14th of Adar, killing an additional 300 men, and we are told once again, Uvavizah lo shalchu et yadam, they did not touch the spoils of war. While the Jews in all the other provinces fought on the 13th of Adar, killing 75,000 people total, which Dot Mikra points out is a little under 600 people per province. We are told a third time that spoils were not taken, this time by all the Jews throughout the empire. At this point, we learn about the last three parties of the Megillah. Jews throughout the empire celebrate their victory on the 14th of Adar, the Jews of Shushan celebrate on the 15th of Adar, and the holiday of Purim is established for the future on the 14th or 15th of Adar, depending on whether or not one lives in a walled city like Shushan. These three parties at the end of the book contrast Ahasuerus' three parties at the beginning of the book and are part of the mirror image style highlighting the reversal which we have seen. Mordechai writes letters to Jews near and far to continue to celebrate Purim in gratitude for the Jews being saved from their enemies. Rav Bachrach points out that we don't celebrate the day of the victory, but rather the day after when we found respite from our enemies, because that's really what we seek, menucha. We seek peace. We don't celebrate war, but rather no longer having to fight. In Mordechai's letters, he includes the mitzvot, the commandments of Purim, which we continue to observe nowadays. Mishloach manot ish l're'ehu, sending food to one another, and matanot levyonim, giving gifts to the poor. These mitzvot also highlight our values in contrast to those of Amalek. When Moshe recounts our encounter with Amalek in Parshat Zachar, it says in Devarim Kafhei Yudchet, Devarim chapter 25, verse 18, Asher karcha baderech vayezanev b'cha kol hanecha shalim acharecha v'ata ayef v'yageya v'lo yirei Elokim. And Amalek happened upon you on the way, attacking those of you who straggled behind, and you were tired and exhausted with no fear of God. Amalek picks off the weak, those who are physically weak and those who are spiritually weak. Our victory against this evil is celebrated by strengthening our unity, giving to each other, and especially the poor. In his great work of Jewish law, the Mishneh Torah, Rambam points out that the commandment to give to the poor supersedes spending on one's own Purim feast and giving food to friends. Our celebration is about taking care of the vulnerable, and that is how we defy our enemy who exploits those who are vulnerable. Our chapter continues by indicating that the Jews accept this new holiday of Purim, named after the lots drawn by Haman upon themselves and future generations, and that Mordechai and Esther send out a second letter, perhaps referring to the Megillah itself, to the Jews throughout the Persian Empire. In this chapter, Perek Tet, chapter 9, we have seen the final stage of the salvation of the Jews, their successful battle against their enemies, and the celebration of their victory, which is in line with our values and so different from those of our enemies. We are nearly finished with the Megillah. Tomorrow's chapter, Perek Yud, has just a few psukim, which we will discuss, as well as summing up the ideas and lessons we have learned from Megillat Esther. Thank you for studying together in the memory of our beloved father and grandfather, Ted Ordon, Mordechai ben Ephraim v'Miriam Golda, in commemoration of his 10th Yahrzeit. His family is forever grateful for his devotion to family, vision, courage, and optimism. May the merit of our collective learning elevate his neshama and bring unity and peace to Klal Yisrael. From Helen and Moshe Sassaber and family.